Hello, and welcome to Stairway to ATJ, the CBA podcast that deals with all things access to justice.
We see access to justice as encompassing all efforts to provide people the opportunity to use the justice system when they are in need of a legal remedy.
Hi, I'm Mia Kotnik, the Access to Justice Program Manager for the Colorado Bar Association.
And I'm Anthony Pereira, a Program Coordinator for Metro Volunteer Lawyers, which is the pro bono arm of the Denver Bar Association. Thank you for joining us on a trek up the Stairway to ATJ. Deserts don't just exist in the Sahara, and they're not just full of sand. There are legal deserts as well. A legal desert is a large geographic area with very few attorneys available to serve that population.
This is a problem that exists across the United States, and legal deserts affect communities here in Colorado too.
This episode of Stairway to ATJ will cover legal deserts and how they impact access to justice in Colorado. We are going to have Ashley Staub discuss the CBA's Veteran Clinic in our pro bono corner. We will feature interviews with Jen Cuesta, an attorney for Colorado Legal Services, and Julie Katz, a family law attorney practicing in Salida in the San Luis Valley. We're also going to have our Eye on ATJ section, where we discuss access to justice news and hot topics from Colorado and the world.
Now we will jump into the Pro Bono Corner. The Pro Bono Corner gives you a chance to hear about pro bono opportunities and programs addressing access to justice issues from every corner of our state. If you would like to be featured or know of a program that should be featured, email us at atjpodcast@cobar.org.
Now let us hear from Ashley Staub, who works for the CBA and runs the CBA's Veterans Clinic. Hello and welcome, Ashley. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good.
Doing all right.
So can you tell us a little bit about what you do for the CBA?
Yes. So I am a program coordinator for the sections and committees department, and I also do public legal education work. And one of the sections that I actually manage is the military and veteran affairs section.
So we brought you in today to kind of talk about the CBA's Veteran Clinic. Can you tell us a little bit more about that program specifically?
Yeah. So the Colorado Lawyers for Colorado Veterans, or CLCV, are clinics in pro bono case management that are officially handled by the Military and Veteran Affairs section at the CBA. Generally, the CLCV hosts two free clinics a month, one in Denver and one in Colorado Springs. And at these free clinics, we have a number of volunteer attorneys that come in and get to have one-on-one conversations with the veterans who are in need of some legal help. The volunteers that come in have experience in different practice areas, so we're really able to help veterans on a wide variety of legal issues. These clinics are intended to provide general legal advice and help the veterans in filling out forms, but we also offer a service where attorney volunteers can take on the veteran case pro bono or modest means, depending on the status of the client. And similarly to that, if we're unable to resolve the veteran's problems at the clinic, an additional legal information or referral is necessary to solve that issue, then we try and pair them up with volunteer attorneys outside of the clinic, virtually.
So it sounds like a very comprehensive program. How have things changed with COVID?
A lot has changed because of COVID. So in response to that, we had to cancel all of our in-person clinics. We'll still get those back up and running again once everything opens up. But in the meantime, we're still just doing our best to help these veterans. So right now I've been doing the normal clinic intakes via email and over the phone when veterans reach out to the CLCV program. And I try and pair the veterans with volunteer attorneys on the back end. By sending out these different cases to hundreds of different volunteer attorneys. And it's been pretty successful, and we've actually been able to find help for more than half of the veterans who have reached out to us during COVID. And we're also looking into other phone clinic options, but nothing has really been finalized yet.
So Ashley, you mentioned that you handle a variety of cases. Can you give us a couple examples as far as the types of cases you see, as well as if your volunteers need any particular legal expertise?
Yeah, so the cases that we see are truly all over the board. As I had previously mentioned, our volunteers are experts in all different practice areas, which is critical because we have so many different veterans with different legal issues that come in. The most common ones that come up are in family law, VA benefits, criminal law, trust and estates, in housing, but the clinic isn't limited to those topics. The volunteers don't really need a ton of experience to help out. They obviously have to be licensed to offer legal advice, but we have young lawyers that come in that are just gaining their first experience. And we have volunteers with a ton of experience who just have extra time on their hands and just want to help out. We welcome any volunteers, I guess. So if people don't have experience, they can sit in with other volunteers until they're comfortable.
Ashley, can you tell us about a success story with one of your cases or volunteers?
Yeah. So this happened a little while back, but it shows how really supportive the entire community is for veterans beyond just the CLCB program. So there was a veteran that was really down on his luck, and he had reached out to some of his neighbors on the Next Door app just to get a ride to an interview that he had. And this lady, his neighbor, who offered to take him for a ride, was talking to him and found out that he was kind of in a web of other issues, starting that all stemmed from a legal issue. And he wasn't able to get his driver's license because of this issue, which meant he couldn't get a car to get to a job. And then he was having a hard time getting a job because he couldn't get to it. So the neighbor reached out to us, and we were able to pair him up with a volunteer that week, who helped him get his license back and essentially start or fix the first problem that was able to get him all back up and running again. And he was also able to get other help after this. Like, he was able to get donations for money for a car, and then he was able to get to this job interview. So it was a feel good story kind of all around, that stemmed from just one legal issue that he was having trouble with.
Yeah. It sounds like a simple, simple task by an attorney really helped him out a lot. So if any of our listeners want to volunteer and become that volunteer attorney that helps this person get their life on track, how can they get involved?
So they can reach out to me personally, and I can sign them up to volunteer at one of the clinics or virtually, or they can fill out a volunteer form on the cobar.org website under the Pro Bono Opportunities tab.
Great. Thank you so much, Ashley.
And Thanks. That was Ashley Staub of the CBA joining us in our Pro Bono Corner to talk about her successful veterans clinic.
So today's interview will focus on legal deserts. This is a hot topic and has captured the attention of both the ABA, the CBA, judges, and attorneys all across the country, in addition to us here at Stairway to ATJ.
And as mentioned at the top of the episode, a legal desert is a vast geographical area where residents do not have access to an attorney for even simple legal matters like contesting a traffic violation.
Today we are joined by two guests who can give us some firsthand insight into this issue caused by legal deserts, as well as who can help us understand how it's affecting communities in Colorado and how those communities are dealing with this issue.
We're going to hear from Jen Cuesta, who is the Rural Pro Bono Attorney for Colorado Legal Services. And later in the interview, she will tell us more about her background and the work she does.
And we'll also hear from Julie Katz. She is a solo practitioner in Salida, and we'll learn more about her path and the work she does for the people in the beautiful Rocky Mountain community. So before we get into legal deserts specifically, let us see what our guest's point of view on about access to justice. So Julie, in a sentence or two, tell us what does access to justice mean to you?
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. To me, access to justice means really the ability of every person, regardless of their income or where they're located, to be able to obtain legal assistance and access to the court system.
I think providing access to the courts is a big part of what access to justice is. Jen, what does access to justice mean to you?
Mine kind of mimics part of what Julie just said, of just like any initiative or work being done to give equal access to our legal system and its remedies, regardless of income, representation, location, and race.
And Jen, can you tell us about your path to becoming the Rural Pro Bono Program Attorney? That's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm sorry about that. For me, I'm from Colorado, but from the Denver metro area. And so I knew coming out of law school, my goal was to do legal aid and work with low-income communities. I was not focused on rural communities, but Colorado Legal Services made sense for me, and this was the position that I ended up getting, and I'm so happy I did, just because it has opened my eyes to parts of Colorado I didn't previously know, even though I was from here, and the additional challenges they face.
And Julie, you're in Greater Colorado or Rural Colorado. Tell us about how you became a family law attorney in Salida in the San Luis Valley.
Sure. Well, I was originally from Fort Collins, Colorado, which most people are familiar with because of the university there and really kind of a great community. It's growing. And really shortly after I got engaged, my husband and I were looking to, you know, settle down in a small mountain community. We wanted to plant our roots. So we found Salida, and I saw some opportunities here in the legal world. And thrilled that it's worked out, thrilled that we found Salida, and I've been able to start this firm and provide assistance to the clients here.
That's wonderful. So you kind of have a metro-y point of view as well as a Greater Colorado point of view. So in general, what does Salida attorneys think of the Denver metro area?
Well, you know, I don't want to speak for other people too much, but from what I've heard, you know, it's the recognition that we're not Denver, and that we have some things to offer that Denver maybe doesn't have to offer. So, you know, even though we are maybe a little rural and maybe we don't have some of the same services, we really do have a lot to offer our communities. It's really a thriving area here. So you hear the term legal desert, and when I hear desert, I think of, you know, kind of a desolate area. And really what I've seen is it's far from desolate. These communities are thriving, and there's a lot of opportunities here.
That's really nice to hear. And I know I work with Metro Volunteer Lawyers, which is a Denver Bar program. And so I kind of know the Denver metro area. But Jen, you work with attorneys throughout the state. So can you give us a little bit of lay of the land as far as the rest of the state?
In terms of kind of how many there are and how many.
Yeah. What do the regions of state look like as far as attorneys to population and how they're working with it?
Well, I mean, Denver doesn't have a problem getting new attorneys. I think it's especially in the last decade, it's such a popular community to come to, especially for young people. So Denver has no problem sustaining and growing its attorney population. In 2019, Denver County had over 134,000 attorneys, which for us means one attorney per 15 low-income Coloradans. And that's kind of how we as a legal aid organization look at it. Whereas rural Colorado, and this is not unique to Colorado, it's many states across our country, our rural communities are seeing a shrinking attorney population. This is an older article, but in 2014, North Dakota found that while 20% of the U.S. population lives in rural communities, only 2% of small practices are located there. We're just seeing this continuing repetition of older attorneys who are ready to retire, who would love to give their practice to a new attorney, but the new attorneys just are not coming in. And specific to Colorado, 13 of our 64 counties have two or less attorneys. We even have two counties with no registered attorneys.
With zero, you're saying?
Yeah, zero. We have two counties with zero registered attorneys. And just as an example for a specific county in Swatch County in the San Luis Valley, there are only two registered attorneys and over 2,000 low-income clients. So in terms of recruiting for pro bono, it's almost impossible. Those local attorneys do great work, but there's just not enough of them, and they're not being replaced.
So, Julie, we just heard, you know, about the lack of attorneys in certain parts of the state. Are there enough attorneys in SLIDA from what you see?
You know, there are quite a few attorneys here. However, in terms of their practice areas, I still see a need for attorneys here that are willing to, you know, take on some of the kind of family disputes, traffic violations, some of the smaller level type legal work that's still very important, but there's certainly a gap there.
So without enough attorneys to meet the need, how have you organized your business model to serve that need?
Well, I think for a lot of young attorneys, you know, when they think of finding legal work, they think of joining a large firm and becoming an associate and kind of working that path. I think to come out to a smaller community takes, a little bit of being able to put yourself out there and take a leap and start a solo practice. What we see out here is not very many large firms. In fact, most of what we have out here is just solo practitioners running their own firm. And that's how I've certainly tried to meet the need here. I have low overhead, so I don't have a large office. I don't have staff. I don't have a lot of, fancy marble tables and equipment, but I am able to, meet clients where they're at, use technology, which allows me to keep my prices affordable and keep my caseload small so that I'm able to independently meet my clients' needs.
So you're telling us about some of the maybe non-traditional ways that you serve your clients. We also understand that you do like non-traditional billing practices, like unbundling. Can you talk a little bit more about how you're meeting the needs of your clients in your community?
Sure. Again, I think the traditional practice is, you accept a large retainer and then you work down from that retainer and provide monthly billing statements. Clients here don't have thousands of dollars ready to be able to put into a trust account to start, but they need legal assistance and they need it now. So I've been able to fill that gap by offering, unbundled services where, we enter an agreement to maybe have limited representation. They're paying me just for one hearing, but it's a very important hearing and they want to have an attorney by their side for that hearing. Doing some flat fee work as well. So maybe again, they don't want to, or have the ability to lay down thousands of dollars, but they have a set amount and I'm able to take a look at the case, offer them that set amount to the conclusion of the case, and that meets their needs and again allows me to provide legal assistance.
So Anthony and I both work with a group here in Denver, Modern Law Practice Initiative, and they're really interested in a lot of these alternative billing practices and non-traditional representation, and it's so great to see how that just naturally, is the way that you adapt to your clients' needs in different parts of the state.
And Julie, have you found that conflicts of interest have been an issue with a person going to speak to a couple different attorneys so then you can't represent them, or?
Well, I think conflicts of interest are always, an issue for any attorney or any firm, especially in small communities, just because they're, people know each other. And so I think it just takes a lot of, meticulous record keeping. And certainly doing those conflict of interest checks throughout the life of a case, not just at the beginning. So you're always assessing for conflicts of interest.
And Jen, turning to you, how is legal aid different in rural parts of the state versus the metro areas?
I mean, I think our offices are structured very differently. So we're a statewide organization. We have 13 offices across the state, and that's very intentional. The importance of having main office, not just in Denver, but in 12 of our communities outside Denver, is vital towards giving community members a local place they can go. And so that is one, but also what is different about those offices is they're all smaller. And so they are, a lot of our attorneys in those offices are, jack of all trades, Jill of all trades. They wear many hats. They have to be able to practice in a variety of different areas of law, whereas in our Denver offices, our attorneys tend to specialize a little more. But we always try to make those specialized offices available as well as a resource to our local practitioners in our local offices.
Sounds almost like a hub and spoke model, you know, exactly. Where you have the expertise.
So when serving Coloradans and throughout the state, the easy solution tends to be technology. You could just use more tech and to serve low-income clients throughout Colorado. However, tech is not always the solution. So what role has technology played in ensuring Coloradans have access to justice?
You know, for me and in my role, it's been huge. My whole job was focused on being able to recruit attorneys from metropolitan communities where there's just more of them. And then so that they can serve rural Colorado. And that was only possible through technology. Asking attorneys from Denver to travel, you know, 3 hours one way to get to a community, it's just not a sustainable model. And so we've been able to incorporate technology, more specifically video conferencing, phones, email, stuff like that, so that we can use this pool of metro attorneys to serve our rural communities and meet our rural need.
And what are the limitations? Is there a lack of high-speed internet, or how are you getting the clients to use technology?
I mean, there is in many places a lack of high-speed internet. You'll have even partners who have the better Wi-Fi in the area. It's still unreliable sometimes. So internet, you know, how good the internet is definitely a limitation. And then representation is as well, like representation for a hearing. That's something our judges with COVID, I think, are becoming a little more open to different means of representation, but generally it's something that cannot be done remotely. So that is another limitation as well.
And Julie, how do you integrate technology in your practice? And is internet, access to internet, an issue for your clients?
Technology is also huge for me in my practice. In fact, I don't think I would be here without technology. What I found is actually most of my clients are quite familiar with technology. They're good with computers. A lot of them have mobile phones that have apps and other devices on them. So I haven't had connectivity issues so far. I do know with COVID, that's changing what the courts are willing to do in terms of allowing video appearances. And I think that's going to be helpful going forward because that's going to eliminate any transportation difficulties as well as, you know, weather difficulties and scheduling in terms of driving distance out here in rural Colorado. It just, you have to factor in the driving time as well.
I appreciate you looking at the silver lining of everything that's going on. So Jen, with attorneys aging in greater Colorado and retiring, is it safe to say that attorney scarcity is getting worse? You mentioned the pipeline earlier.
Yes, it is. It is something that was an issue and it's just continuing to get more dramatic. Yeah.
So Jen, could you talk to us a little bit about what a pipeline is and how that might be a solution to some of these issues?
So a pipeline is just looking at our feed of attorneys and seeing if they're there or not. So really just asking ourselves, are we recruiting and do we have people going into law school and finishing law school who want to serve in rural communities? And it's a question both our law schools are asking themselves, both CU and DU have begun encouraging law students to experience and familiarize themselves with what rural practice can look like and the unique opportunities. I think Julie was hinting at some of them, but like you can run for office more easily in rural communities. You can become a judge more easily and kind of if you want that path. You can grow your own food. You can buy a house for a reasonable cost. Well, it depends on the rural community. So I think it's definitely one of those things our law schools are opening up to and trying to figure out how we can get more young attorneys or just attorneys going through law school to consider a rural practice.
And Julie, do you see many young and new attorneys coming to SLIDA in the San Luis Valley?
I have seen a few trickle in. Certainly, a huge impact. But I think, you know, more and more people are recognizing that you can do interesting and meaningful legal work outside of Denver. And in fact, it's a great way to balance quality of life as well. There's great opportunities out here, you know, travel and tourism, recreation, and it's a great way to find that balance. And, you know, I find my work to be quite rewarding. I, you know, have a lot of direct contact with clients and can help them when it is important to them. And so I would encourage anyone to consider a legal career outside of the metro area.
And Jen, you told us a little bit about a pipeline and recruiting attorneys to move into different areas, but I think there's also a capacity issue that's more immediate. Can you talk about what's being done around that?
Yeah, so I think as states are trying to work through the pipeline issue, and no one's quite cracked that nut yet, the more urgent issue is just how do we get resources to our rural communities as we work to build that pipeline. And I think, you know, some resolutions we've seen, including here in Colorado, is the use of paraprofessionals, paralegals, legal assistants. Our Sherlock program, it's the self-represented litigant coordinators. I know it's a long one, but they're essentially a court staff member in each of our jurisdictions, our 22 jurisdictions. They're a free resource for people that do not have attorneys. And while they can't provide legal advice, they can offer assistance with what forms you need to fill out, how to fill them out, how to serve somebody. And so I think, and, you know, this is, we've seen this used in Colorado, and then both Washington and Utah have models they're working on for this, of just how, before we can get the attorneys built up, as we're working on that, how do we just increase services to our rural communities in the meantime? And that's been something a number of people are kind of playing with.
Yeah, sometimes a little bit of guidance can go a long way, especially when people are starting to represent themselves and work through the legal system.
So Jen, you mentioned, I think, Washington and Oregon. Are there any highlights or any programs that you just think are really promising?
You know, I think one of the more, we don't know what the resolution of it is going to be, but I think one of the more promising programs and one of the more aggressive ones is in South Dakota. It's called Project Rural Practice. They actually initiated legislation to recruit and support rural attorneys. The program currently has 24 attorneys, and what it does is it essentially gives those attorneys, if they're in a rural community, $13,000 each year on top of what they're making from their salary. And, you know, it took a lot of players. Like I said, it was legislation was enacted for this, TAF paid for by the state, as well as local government and the Bar Foundation. There's incubator programs as well. There's one in Arkansas specific to rural practice. And so I think the big kind of model people are playing with is if we financially support it somehow, will that create enough incentive for new attorneys to begin practicing in rural communities?
I think money can play a big factor in it, but I also really like Julie's talking about, and you're talking about, all the other benefits of living not in a metro area. Growing your own food, work-life balance, running for office, scenery, and everything. I think it's a very unique opportunity that a lot of people don't realize.
Agreed. And I know our mentoring program here in Colorado, CAMP, I know Ryan Paytner was working on developing kind of mentorship programs between law students or recent grads and retiring attorneys in our rural communities, seeing if we can create a relationship there that would, like you said, not just provide the monetary, but provide kind of that cultural assimilation into a community and help foster that. And so I think money is a component of it, but also mentoring, and especially helping people who maybe are not familiar with rural communities, helping them adapt to that life too, and learn the benefits and learn to love it as well.
So Julie, when you went from Fort Collins to Greater Colorado, how was the networking and how did the attorneys react to you as a new attorney in that area?
I did reach out to some local attorneys and was pleasantly surprised that they were all very encouraging of having me out here. You know, typically in you know, law school and maybe even starting, you know, a practice, you would think that it's quite competitive. I found it was the opposite. I found I was embraced and everyone encouraged it and said, you know, don't worry, the work is here. Just get going and the work will be here. And that's what I found to be true is despite maybe, you know, the population isn't, you know, all that high, but there's plenty of work to be done for people that want to be here and want to do a good job and are willing to work hard. You know, in law school, you're taught the law and how to research and write, but you're not taught how to run a business. And so I really love what Jen was talking about with, you know, partnering with a senior attorney that's willing to kind of show you the ropes of running an actual firm, because that's a huge part of what it takes to have a successful practice.
And speaking of successes, we do like to end on a high note. So can each of you share a story about how your work has enhanced access to justice in Colorado? We'll start with Jen.
Yeah. So I know that, I mean, COVID is obviously a very present thing in everyone's lives. And for our clients who are all low income, it has impacted them so much more. And then for our rural clients, once again, you face additional challenges. So we were really excited to see that the work we'd done previously on our clinics that utilize technology and Metro attorneys allowed us to adapt more quickly to the challenges presented by COVID in our rural communities. And specifically, we had two clinics that were done in partnership with local libraries who are phenomenal partners, but because of COVID are closed or open in very limited capacity. And what we found is that one of our other models, our Call for All clinic, which is a phone-based clinic, not only was there and developed with our law firm partner, Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck, but that it had the capacity to absorb the 10 counties that were served by those other clinics. And it was, we could do it immediately. So I think that was one of those things where we saw kind of the fruits of our labor, you know, just see a different way that those could help and allow us to adapt so quickly to such a new challenge and the challenges represented by COVID. So I would say that was one of our success stories recently of just seeing, like, you know, by building these different models and going in unique ways and incorporating technology, there are challenges, of course, but it also allows you an innovativeness and an adaptiveness that you can't have when you're doing traditional practice.
It's nice that you had that strong foundation. You're ready for the worst to happen. So Julia, how about a success story from you?
Sure, it would probably be my very first private client. I think you'll always remember kind of that first client that you served, and it was someone who, you know, didn't have a lot of disposable income and had tried to get representation and was not able to secure representation through any other means. And we did an unbundled service for a particular hearing. I was able to be there at that hearing, provide representation. And so it was a success story in that sense. We had a good outcome.
So Jen, if any attorneys or clients want to find more out about the Colorado Legal Services Rural Pro Bono Program, what would be the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, well, if you are an attorney who's interested in volunteering, you can contact me at my email. It's jcuesta, J-C-U-E-S-T-A, at colegalserve.org, colegalserve.org. So reach out if you're interested in volunteering or learning more. And then also, if you are a low-income client who is needing civil legal aid, please feel free to give our statewide intake number a phone call, or our number a phone call. It's 303-837-1321. Or you can find information about your local office on our website at coloradolegalservices.org.
And if there are any attorneys interested in what it's like to practice in Greater Colorado, Julie, do you want to give your contact information for them to reach out with questions?
Certainly. The best way would be to connect on my website, which is CatsLawLLC.com, and it has my contact information and it describes my practice as well.
Thank you both so much for your time. I found it very educational. We learned a lot about legal deserts and what it's like to practice in Greater Colorado.
Next up is Eyes on ETJ. In this segment, we highlight the most important and enduring issues affecting access to justice in Colorado, the United States, and internationally.
That's right. Let's keep our eyes on the prize. But if you see anything that you want us to talk about, shoot us an email at atjpodcast@cobar.org.
Anthony, I would like to start today's Eyes on ATJ conversation with LegalBots.
LegalBots? They scare me because I fear Skynet's going to take over.
Well, not all legal bots or legal chat bots are out to destroy humanity. By providing relatively simple legal services at a fraction of the cost of hiring an attorney, I can understand why attorneys might fear bots taking over our profession. But those cost savings are exactly what makes them so potentially powerful as an access to justice tool. For example, Colorado Legal Services has a bot called Duncan the Debt Bot that does not give legal advice, but does help educate debtors about what their options are and provide accurate and up-to-date information in an ever-changing area of the law. And it can also help people fill out forms from the comfort of their own home.
It's amazing that Duncan, a little chatbot, can do all of that. It actually reminds me of a program I learned about in law school that used computer learning to help with document review. It actually takes an attorney and reviews like 1,000 files, says this is relevant, this isn't relevant, and then the computer picks up on those tendencies and can apply it to the other billing documents that a person has to go through. It can really create some cost saving for clients if a legal bot or Duncan or something like that using technology is doing the doc review and doing some of the legal advice that attorney, even one fresh out of law school, can do.
Yeah, and I mean, attorneys suffer from mind numbingness after hours and hours of doc review, but a legal bot never does.
So true. So we're gonna discuss a new concept. It's kind of related to legal deserts in a way. I actually learned about this at the American Bar Association's Equal Justice Conference in 2019. It's actually called the Justice Bus.
And Anthony, I'm so glad you brought this to my attention. I think this is just the coolest concept. I think this bus might even be cooler than the Magic School Bus. So Anthony, what is a Justice Bus?
Well, it's not driven by Miss Frizzle, but they are buses or vans that take attorneys, paralegals, law students to rural areas, which are often legal deserts. So the idea is to help community members get legal services they need by bringing the legal professionals to them. And it solves the transportation issues that many rural communities suffer from. Others also bring important resources like Wi-Fi, printers, and access to paperwork and judicial forms that they can be filled out to achieve their desired results.
Wow, it sounds like one-stop shopping for legal services. Most justice buses focus on one particular area of the law, like expunging or sealing criminal records or helping individuals fill out immigration paperwork to apply for citizenship. I read about different versions of the justice bus in California, Washington, Georgia, Kentucky, and New York. Most of these buses travel to the most rural parts of their state. And many of the buses also include opportunities for law students. I read an article about how participating in a justice bus was the first real client interaction a law student ever had.
It sounds like a fun and adventurous way to do some pro bono work. Maybe after COVID, you and I can rent a bus.
Oh, let's do it. The final topic I want to talk about is It's Our Turn.
It's Our Turn for what?
Well, It's Our Turn is the name of a new campaign by the CBA, Alpine Legal Services, CAMP, COVID Eviction Defense Project, and Succession to Service. The campaign is saying that first responders stepped up and met the challenges brought on by COVID, and now it's our turn as lawyers and legal professionals to answer the call. Coloradans are in need of legal help to navigate these difficult times, but many of them are unable to afford an attorney because lots of people are looking at financial issues right now.
Right. So we as attorneys, not like first responders, but we're kind of like the second responders. So how can an attorney answer the call?
So they can go to succession2service.org. The best description I heard of this is that it's like internet dating for attorneys and nonprofits. So on Succession to Service, there are a bunch of different nonprofit organizations that attorneys can volunteer with, and they can kind of look through the different profiles and see which opportunity might be a good fit for them.
The other thing I like about this campaign and this It's Our Turn marketing is that it's shared with the local bars, the local ATJ committees, legal aid organizations across the state, and they can adapt the materials and messaging to fit their communities.
So listeners, it's your turn. Get out there and volunteer.
All right. Thank you for joining us today on the CBA Stairway to the ATJ podcast in our discussion on legal deserts. I'm Anthony Pereira. Be good, everyone.
And I'm Mia Kotnick. Keep climbing, stay hydrated, and come volunteer with us.